You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The world is now in the gravest possible danger of a pandemic, is how Shigeru Omi, head of the World Health Organization's Western Pacific office, phrased it, referring to the current outbreak of a deadly bird flu. He spoke in Ho Chi Minh City at the gathering of world health experts trying to grapple with that virus, which has just infected another victim. More than 40 have died worldwide since this outbreak began, and there has been some evidence in the past year that the bird flu has started mutating into a form that can be passed easily from person to person. Health organizations around the world have mobilized their resources to prepare for a pandemic if and when the virus mutates fully into a strain that could quickly spread through the human population. The threat is more immediate in Asian countries, but should a pandemic occur, it could spread around the world in a matter of months, if not sooner. So this hour, we're going to be talking about just how much of a threat this outbreak poses. If it does spread, could we produce enough vaccine to contain the pandemic? Clinical trials have begun in the U.S. Of a vaccine designed to combat the current very deadly avian flu. And joining us to talk about it today are two of the people on the front line of the fight against the avian flu. And if you'd like to join our discussion, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Klaus Sturr is the project leader of the WHO Global Influenza Program at the World Health Organization. He joins us today by phone from France. Welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good evening to you. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda. He joins us today from his office there. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Fauci.
Thank you,
Aaron. Dr. Sturr, do you agree with Dr. Omi, who said this week that this was the greatest possible danger of a pandemic now?
Well, these influenza pandemics are unpredictable events. They're relatively rare. But every century, there are two, three, or four of these pandemics. They have occurred since mankind exists. And with this bird flu virus circulating in the, Asia relatively widely, having already shown that it can transmit to humans, not mm-hmm. causing a lot of transmission at this stage, we are certainly in a situation where it would be wrong to believe that we will get away again like the last more than 36 years, when the last pandemic occurred, and it's a good idea now to do a risk assessment and prepare if a pandemic would occur.
Dr. Fauci, is it just a matter of time here?
Well, certainly if you look at the cycles of pandemic flus, and there's wide variability in seriousness. The one that frightens everyone was the 1918 pandemic flu, where 20 to 40 million people worldwide were died. There were other minor versions of pandemic flus in 1957 and 1968. I agree with the assessment that this flu is unpredictable, but it would be folly to assume that something like this is not going to happen, because it inevitably will, whether it's going to be this year or next year or the following year. The reason that there's so much concern now, I think, Ira, one can put it in the terminology of compounding probabilities. If you don't have any chickens infected, it's not going to jump to humans, so there's no probability. But when you have some chickens infected, it's a little probability. When you have a lot of chickens in one country, and then you have a lot of chickens, tens to hundreds of millions, in several Asian countries here, 9 or 10, particularly with the problem in Vietnam and Thailand being severe, and then you have people infected, at least 55 with 42 deaths, and then you have a clearly reported case of the fact that an individual, a young girl, very likely gave it to her mother because she was exposed, the child, to chickens and the mother was not. You're having all of these probabilities increasing and increasing. So as the evolution of the virus going towards a capability of what we are concerned about, namely efficient spread from human to human, will likely take an evolution of mutations or recombinations or reassortments with other virus that this virus is likely capable of doing. Whether it's going to successfully do it now or not, we don't know. It's unpredictable, but the danger is there. And I think that's what people are getting justifiably concerned enough to say, what are we going to do about it? So rather than panic about it, you have to start thinking in terms of getting vaccines, stockpiling antiviruses, et cetera.
Can you get enough? Is the idea to vaccinate everyone or to just try to contain it where it breaks out?
Well, it's going to depend on how it evolves. For example, if you start seeing a situation in Asia, in Vietnam or Thailand or another country, in which there are not very efficient but nonetheless more than just one or two individuals, and the virus is learning how to transmit from person to person, you're not going to have enough vaccine at that point, certainly not to vaccinate everybody. So you'll have to do more of a containment, do public health measures of isolation and public health measures, and then vaccinate the people who might be the contacts in order to get geared up in time to be able to really scale up to get enough vaccine that if it does become a global pandemic, that you can do that. But right now, the vaccine producing capacity of the world is not that they can make enough vaccine to vaccinate everybody. So that's just logistically an impossible thing right now.
Well, then you're talking panic if something breaks out. You know, look what we had just with the flu we had in this country. There were not enough, you know, doses to go around, and seniors were told to get it and not anyone else. We had long lines. We had people panicking. Imagine if this would spread and we don't have enough vaccine and people know that.
Yeah, well, globally, certainly we won't. And the WHO would address that even better. But in the United States, what we're doing is that we're geared up. You had mentioned earlier, Ira, that the clinical trials have started. They haven't. They will start imminently. The virus from the contractors that we've contracted with, certainly with the Sanofi Pasteur, the 8,000 doses there to start a clinical trial, we're ready to go. You know, imminently in the next few weeks, it is likely that we will start. No guarantee, but it is likely. But we've also purchased 2 million doses from Sanofi Pasteur, so that it's in a form of what we call commercial scale-up capability. It's still going to take something to get tens and 20 millions of doses for our own country. Worldwide, it's going to be very difficult to get the global vaccine capacity, certainly not within a matter of weeks or months to get there, but we have to start building it right now.
Dr. Sturr, what is the WHO going to do in case, you know, to prevent or to contain if there's an outbreak?
At the end, the capacities to reduce morbidity and mortality, to try to slow down, if that would work, the global spread of the virus, this capacity comes from within the counties, from within the districts, the states, and the countries. WHO is an organization which will be able to certainly detect relatively early, with the support of our network, with the country resources, the emergence of the virus. But the control measures will very much depend upon whether a hospital is ready, whether they have an infectious control plan, whether the government has made decisions to stockpile antivirals, think about upgrading vaccine capacities, whether they have made up their mind on who is going to get the limited resources which will be available. The capacities to control and contain are within the country. WHO will continue to strengthen surveillance, make sure that the prototype vaccine virus is available so that companies can start very quickly. We'll also highlight the need for countries to make an informed choice on how they're going to invest their public health fundings. That's what WHO is very good at, but at the end, it's the question of whether there will be enough hospital beds, whether antibiotics are available, and the vaccine and antivirals, which will make a big difference.
There have been reports in today, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, other organizations have said that we need $100 million.
That's absolutely right.
Immediately.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Public health can do a lot. Dr. Fauci has said what the U.S. is doing. Many other countries are getting up into full gears and pandemic preparedness. We can do a lot of risk reduction, but what public health is doing is damage control. When this virus will be out of the box, then it's going to circumvent the globe. It's going to infect people in every country. However, the profound change in the current risk will not come without a reduction of the disease in animals, without an elimination of this disease in animals. So agriculture can make a big difference here. The veterinary authorities, the Food and Agriculture Organization, they are the ones who can make the big difference in public health risk, not only for the occurrence of these couple of cases which we see now, but also as to the possibility for the emergence of a pandemic.
Dr. Fauci, do I hear you correctly saying that if we're just keeping our fingers crossed that nothing breaks out before we have a vaccine and enough doses ready for everybody?
Yeah. Well, again, as we've said, both of us, the evolution of a pandemic flu is unpredictable. It is likely that if it does occur, that the virus will acquire the capability to spread from person to person efficiently, not overnight, that it will be an evolving situation where it gets better and better, and then it starts to spread. When you see that happening, then the investment must be greater. You can't wait to scale up. You're going to have to say, well, we have 2 million doses. Now it's starting to act in a way that is becoming more and more dangerous as it gets better and better at doing what we're afraid of. And you might have a period of a few months to do that. But again, it gets back to what I was saying before, and the very important point to underscore that was just mentioned is that public health measures of containment are going to be as important as anything else, because although a vaccine is an integral part of the prevention of a global spread, just the vaccine production capability of the world is not such that you're going to make enough for everybody. So it's going to be a combination of vaccinating in those areas where you can contain it, treating people with antiviral drugs, but also synergizing that with the excellent public health measures that we hope the individual countries will execute.
Such as?
For example, if you have hospital capacity, when you have people in the hospital, you've got to protect the healthcare workers, have conditions of isolation that you don't have spread, because usually when you have respiratory diseases and you don't have good hospital infection control, what happens is that people give it to the healthcare workers give it to their family, and then you're out, because the people who are in the closest contact with the people who are sick are the ones who are the most vulnerable. But once it gets out into society, and influenza, unlike other infections, like SARS, was a scary thing. But SARS was relatively difficult to spread from person to person because you needed droplets, not aerosolization. Influenza, as we know, each year, for example, in the United States, with the regular cyclic influenza, anywhere from 5 to 20% of the population will get infected. A small fraction in this country, 36,000 per year, die of flu every single year. Most of them are people who are in advanced age. But when you have a flu, that is a flu to which the global population doesn't have any baseline immunity to, then all bets are off. Then you get young people and children and adults and whatever getting infected.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the dangers of the upcoming possible bird flu epidemic on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Is it a question of finding a vaccine also that, you know, you're talking about tests that are going to be coming up? Do we have a vaccine that would work if we could make enough doses of it?
Well, we know the microbe. We know it's H5N1. And the vaccine that we in the United States are making and that the Vietnamese are trying to make right now themselves is the H5N1 that was actually isolated from a Vietnamese patient. So we are assuming, and I think it's a reasonable assumption, that if, and that's a big if, because it's unpredictable, that you have a situation where that virus starts to attain the capabilities of rapidly spreading, that it won't change so much that it would essentially not match with the ability of the vaccine to protect. But at least you'll get some protection, which is the reason why we're taking the educated assumption that if there's going to be a problem, it's going to be closely related to the virus that's now circulating in Asia, which is why we're making an H5N1 in the doses that I mentioned to you.
Why not just start making millions and millions of doses of vaccine and be ready for if the day it breaks out?
The reason, Ira, is an excellent question. But right now, the totality of our vaccine production capability is geared into making the flu vaccine for this coming winter. We cannot simultaneously do both, make 100 million doses of H5N1 at the same time that they were making 100 million doses of the H3N2, H1N1B that is going to go into the seasonal vaccine. What you can do is that when the vaccine production process usually finishes in the summer and you start preparing, putting it in the vials, instead of shutting off the machinery, which in this case is eggs that are used to grow the virus, you continue the process to then make the H5N1. But you can't do it simultaneously.
Dr. Sterr, what makes this year's different from previous years in an outbreak of a bird flu? It's been breaking out all the time.
Well, that may not be entirely correct. What has happened since 1955, when bird flu was first detected, there were around about 20 outbreaks globally of this highly pathogenic virus, not only H5, different viruses. Only five of them were larger than one farm. They were controlled sometime over years, but an outbreak like this, which H5N1 has caused, has never been seen before. It's totally unprecedented. So many countries. But we have learned even more during the last year, which is concerning, namely that this virus has shown that it can spread also into mammals. Felines were infected already early last year. A couple of leopards in a zoo in Thailand, and at the end of last year, dozens of tigers died or were severely infected. We know now, which is a total surprise for all influenza experts, that this strange H5N1 virus has managed to establish itself in domestic ducks. Many of these ducks, which is quite concerning, do not fall ill. So it makes it much more difficult for a person to protect themselves. It's easier to detect a half-dead chicken with H5N1 than a healthy and happy duck, and many of them are part of a normal backyard animals in every household in Vietnam and Thailand. And these ducks, healthy, excrete virus at the same amount as a very severe chicken. These ducks are therefore a very important hidden reservoir for the spread of the disease to other poultry, as well as a source of infection to humans.
All right. Gentlemen, I've got to interrupt because we've run out of time, but we'll have you back as we follow this development and watch the possible spread of this virus. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at NIH, and Klaus Sterr, President, Project Leader for the WHO Global Influenza Program at the WHO in Geneva. That's about all the time we have for today. If you missed any of what we're talking about, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello, and Ryan Havers in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.